Who are the sponsors? It's
the same sponsors.
Same sponsors as always. Okay, good morning. Today, welcome to the Daf HaShavua Shir. Today we're doing Sukkah Daf Yud Daled. The sponsors, as always, are Yitz Weiss, shake things up a bit this tax season, and Bagel Munch in honor of Jaime's granddaughter. Okay, and we're starting five lines from the bottom. The last word on the line on Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis. So just to kind of refresh our memories, we're talking about the concept of Yados Gutumba. Specifically, the fruits on a branch are Makavel Tumah because they're fruit. The branches themselves typically wouldn't be Makavel Tumah. That's why they're good for Schach. The question is whether the branch immediately attached to the fruit might be Makavel Tumah and even transmit Tumah to the fruit, because the branch is kind of appurtenant to the fruit. It is, you could, when you're eating the fruit, you might hold the branch and use it as your lollipop stick to eat the fruit off of it. So the branch in such a case would be Makabel Tumah because it's kind of appurtenant to the fruit. And we said that that issue was a machlokas between the Chachamim, the Tanakama, and Acherim. Going up to kind of almost up to the middle, we had a braisa that says, Sochei teinim, uvehen teinim, parchun, uvehenom, and all sorts of fruits that have a branch attached to them. So then the machlokas is as follows. The Chachamim, meaning the Tanakhama, said that if you want to use this thing as schach, you have to have enough stuff that's not mekabel tumah to overcome the stuff that is mekabel tumah. It's got to be batal. You have to have the rove stuff that's like just branches that are not mekabel tumah. And if the rove is not mekabel tumah, and that is enough to overcome the miut, the smaller amount that is mekabel tumah, so then you're okay. So the Chachamim said you have to measure it versus the fruits themselves, right? Im psoas meruba ochlin kshera vimlav psua. So the Chachamim said, as long as the main branches are the majority and the fruits themselves are the minority, then you're okay. Then you could use this as schach because the majority is not mekabel tumah. Whereas acherim omrim, ad shiyu kashin merubin al hayados v'al ochlin. It has to be that the branches are the rove to overcome not just the fruit themselves, but the yados, the small branches or the stems that come out of the fruits, because those stems presumably are mekabel tumah or transmit tumah as well. So that's machlokes. Are these stems also tameh, just like the fruits, or are they not? So the Gemara says now, on the last word of the fifth to last line of Yud Gimel Amud Beis, E kotzitzin la'achila. How did you originally cut down these branches? If you cut them down originally in order to eat the fruits on them, so then, my taimayhu drabanan. Why would the Rabbanan think that the yados are not mekabel tumah? They should still be mekabel tumah, right? V'chi teima ka savri Rabbanan kevan dinim l'chalein l'sichuch bat lo l'hum le'mach shavaso. If the Chacham's idea here is that since you've now decided that originally what you would cut down for fruit, you're now going to use a schach, and so therefore it's no longer mekabel tumah because your intention of what you're using these stems for had changed. So, v'chibat l'loi machshava b'hachi, is that sufficient to change the nature of these stems? The mere change of your idea of what you're going to use it for, if when you originally cut it down, it's going to be used for fruit. So then these stems should be mekabel tumah. They should be tameh. And now you've said, okay, now I'm no longer using them for the fruit, but I'm just using them as part of my schach. So is that change in thought, that change of intent, sufficient to change the whole nature of these stems to now make them not mekabel tumah and now be able to join the rest of the branches in terms of what the rove is? V'atanan, don't we have a mission that teaches us, kol ha-kelim yordin li de-tumah b'machshava vein olin mitumason ela bishinui ma'isa. We have a rule that says that when you're determining whether something is makabel tumah or what its purpose is for purposes of analyzing whether it's makabel tumah, so thought alone or intention alone is sufficient to make it, to render it mekabel tuma, but it's not sufficient to pull it out and make it tahor. So let's say, for example, you have, as Rashi explains, you have a situation where you're dealing with animal hides. So animal hides are only going to be mekabel tuma once they are finished being made, right? Animal hide is, as the raw material, is not mekabel tuma. It's only mekabel tuma once it has been fashioned into the ultimate end product of what you're trying to use that animal hide for. So if you're using that animal hide to make shoes, so once you've crafted the shoes, you do the ibud, you do the pressing of the hides and cleaning it and doing all the work that you're going to do, and then you cut it and then you sew it and you make the shoes. So now once you have those shoes are kalim, and now they're mekabel tuma. But in any earlier stage that you're just working with the hides, they're not mekabel tuma because they're not yet a kli. Now, an animal hide could be used for multiple purposes. Maybe you might have cut that animal hide off the animal just to use as a tablecloth. That doesn't require very much work. All you have to do is kind of cut it into a rectangle, and now it's a tablecloth. So if your initial intention was to use that animal hide as a tablecloth, so then as soon as you've cut that animal hide into a tablecloth, or really as soon as you kind of harvested the animal hide and just do that initial ibud, so it's now going to be mekabel tuma. But if your intention originally was to make it into shoes, so then that animal hide, as long as it might look like a tablecloth now, but it's not yet reached its gemar malacha stage, and so it's not going to be mekabel tuma until you've actually made it into shoes. So that designation of that animal hide, either as a tablecloth, which would render it tame earlier in the process, or as shoes, which would mean that it's not going to become tame until later in the process, is the mere intent of what you're using it for is sufficient. So you take that animal hide and you say, I'm not using this animal hide, or even think to yourself, maybe, I'm not using this animal hide as a tablecloth, I'm just using it as shoes, so then the animal hide won't become won't be mekabel tuma until it's actually made into shoes. So that's true in terms of rendering a tame. But what about if you change your mind and you originally had in mind to do it as shoes, and so now you've designated this animal hide for shoes, and now you start cutting it and you say, oh, you know what, this would make a good tablecloth. So can your mere intent to undo your original intent and say, this is no longer going to be designated for shoes, but rather just as a tablecloth, is that enough to now make it tame at an earlier stage of the tablecloth stage? And the Gemara says no. In order for you to make it tame at an earlier stage, in order for you to undo an original designation, that you need a maisa. You need to actually do something physical to the tablecloth in order to bring it back to that earlier stage.
There is a difference between a tablecloth and shoes?
There's a clear difference, because shoes are not really good shoes until you've woven them and made them into shoes.
No, meaning in the tuma. No, in the tuma, like, because it's something that's like touching the ground.
No. Each of them are going to be susceptible of tuma at whatever level they're susceptible of tuma at the end stage of their production.
So it doesn't matter even if I decided to make it a carpet or a rug or
right.
Whatever.
Right, as long as it's a kli, as long as it's a usable item, it's going to become susceptible to tuma at the point where you've hit the end of the production. Uh-huh. So the Gemara is saying here now that if you had originally cut these branches intending on eating the fruits, right? And now, and so therefore we're saying that those yados theoretically should be mekabel tuma, right? Because they are useful in eating the fruit. You hold on to the branch or the stem and you eat the fruit off of it. And now, maybe the Chachamim are saying that the reason why these yados are not mekabel tuma is because after you've cut them, you've now rethought your intent and said, no, you know what, these will make good schach for my sukkah. And then therefore you're going to now make these yados, these branches or these little stems, no longer mekabel tuma because they're no longer useful for eating the fruit, because that's not your intent. But that doesn't work, because the rule is that in order to take away a tuma status, in order to make something less susceptible to tuma, you need a maisa. It's not good enough to have a machshava. That's the Gemara's question here. Va'atanan kol kelim yordin li de tuma b'machshava. They can make them, we can make them susceptible to tuma with mere intent. Vein olin mitumasan elo bishinoi maisa. But you can only make them less susceptible to tuma with a actual maisa, with changing them. And then the Bach changes their girsa slightly. Shehamaisa mavatel miad maisa umiad machshava. Umachshava ina mavatelas lo miad maisa velo miad machshava. As we just explained, machshava is sufficient to make something mekabel tuma, but it's not sufficient to backtrack and make it less susceptible to tuma. So that's the question on the Chachamim. Why is it that these Chachamim don't think that the Yados are now Mekabel Tuma just because you've changed your intent and now designated them for Schach? So the Gemara now suggests that maybe that rule, that hard and fast rule that we have, that Machshava is insufficient to roll back its status and make it less susceptible to be Mekabel Tuma, maybe that's only true when it comes to Kalim. Your standard situation you're dealing with is, like the animal hides, is when it comes to kelim, right? V'chite mahani mili kelim dechashivi. Those are important, those have chashivas. Aval yados de'utzorach achila ninhu b'machshava naisa uv'machshava salka. Maybe there's a lower test here when it comes to yados. We're not as rigorous in applying these rules when it comes to yados, which was, what was the yados? It was just the stem of the fruit that's just a little easier to hold to eat the fruit. And since it has some kind of utility in that you're holding it to eat the fruit off of it, so that's why we said it's makabal tuma. But it's not really a kli, right? It's not, when you think of a kli, you're not thinking of a stem of a fruit. The stem of fruit is just there, so you hold on to it and you can eat the fruit. And so maybe when it comes to yados, we don't apply this hard and fast rule. And when it comes to yados, mir machshava would be sufficient to take away its ability to become tame, and that would then explain the Chacham's position of why yados are no longer susceptible to tuma once you've redesignated and rethought what the purpose of these branches is and applying them for schach. So the Gemara is now going to test that theory. And it's going to say that's not really true. It's hard to imagine that the standard is lower for yados than it is for kelim. But tanan, because we have a brisa that says, a brisa in uktzin that says, kol yados ha'ochlin shebisasun begorin toros. The Tana Kama says that when you have these stems of fruits, where we, as we know, they're tamei, they're mekabel tuma because they have a utility and that you hold them to eat the fruit. Once you've bussasun means you kind of crush them or trample on them, begorin on the threshing floor, right? Let's say you're making grape juice. So these grapes now are attached to these stems. Now you throw them on the floor and you start crushing them. So once you start crushing them, you've compromised the integrity of the stems, and at that point they become tahor. They're no longer susceptible of tumah. Because remember, the only reason why these stems were susceptible to tumah was because they had a utility and that you're holding them to eat the fruit. But now once you've thrown them on the floor and you start crushing them, you're no longer eating this fruit. You're using these grapes to make grape juice. And so therefore these stems have no utility anymore, and therefore they're tahor. They're no longer susceptible of tumah. They can't transmit tumah to the fruit. They're just tahor. That's the Tana Kama. And as we'll see in a moment, it's in parentheses here now, but we'll see in a moment that Rabbi Yossi disagrees, and Rabbi Yossi says they still are tame. We'll see soon why. So let's focus on the Tana Kama. Bishlom alameam de'amar basasan hitir agudan shapir. If you say that the word basasan means simply that you've kind of untied them, unfurled them, for the purpose of ultimately putting them on the threshing floor and making this whole thing into grape juice. So you haven't really done a maisa to them yet. You've just indicated your intent of no longer eating these grapes as fruit, and now you're making them into grape juice. So it seems then that that should work according to us, because we said, right, what we're trying to say is that yados have a lower standard, and you don't really need a shinoi maisa in order to take yados from its tumah status. It's sufficient to have a shinoi machshava. It's sufficient to just rethink what you're intending on doing. And so if what this Bryce, what this Mishnah means is that once you've untied these stems with the intent now of using the grapes not as fruit but rather as grape juice, that's sufficient now to make these stems no longer mekabel tuma. So then we can understand that works well, because we're saying these stems were only yados. You don't need a full maisa in order to take them from their tuma status. It's sufficient to unfurl them, unwind them with the intent now of now making grape juice. And because they're only yados, that intent is sufficient to take away their tuma status. Elamandi omer my basasan mamish. But if, according to the opinion, and we'll see soon, there's a machlokas there in the Gemara in Uktzin, there on the Uktzin, in the Mishnah in Uktzin, is a machlokas Amarayim now here, we're going to see in a moment, that perhaps that one Mandi Amar says that basasan doesn't mean you just unfurled them with the intent of now making it into grape juice, but you actually started to trample them. You did a shinoi maisa, and it's not until there was a shinoi maisa that these stems are no longer susceptible in tumma. So then ma'ikal meimar, it seems that there's no difference between yados or any other thing, and in order to take away the tumma status from something, you need a maisa. It's not sufficient to have a machshav. It's not sufficient to just change your intent. And then we're back to our original problem. Why did the chachamim think that once you change your mind and now intend to use these things as schach, the yados are no longer tumma? That's the question. So the Gemara answers, Hachanami Shabbasasan Mamish. Maybe when the Chachamim said in that Brisa on Yud Gimel and Mebez that the Yados are no longer susceptible of Tuma because now you've changed your mind and intend to use them for Schach, the Chachamim actually are talking about a situation where you not only changed your mind, but you went a step further and you did a Maisa and you started crushing these stems. You didn't just change your mind and now intend to use them for schach, but you actually started manipulating them and crushing them and using it as schach, and therefore that's considered a maisa, and that maisa is sufficient now to take away the tumah status of these stems and make them not mekabel tumah anymore. So if that's the way we're understanding what the chachamim say, that it's only after you start manipulating them and making a maisa and actually changing their physical attributes that no longer are they're no longer tame. The Gemara says, "Ihachi maitaimayu da'acherim." If you remember, the Chachamim weren't the only opinion there. The Chachamim said that these yados, these stems, are no longer tame, but the Acherim said that the yados are still tame. That if you want to be mevatel the tame stuff, you have to have enough psolas. You have to have enough branches to overcome not just the fruits but also the yados. In other words, that the yados are still tame. But if we're saying that the ukimta there, that the situation there was that you actually started crushing these stems, why on earth would Acherim say? Why on earth would the Acherim say that these yados still retain their tuma status? So the Gemara answer is Da'amur Rabbi Yosi. These Acherim actually hold like Rabbi Yossi. In other words, what we're suggesting now is that the machlokas between the Tanakhama and Acherim with regard to the Yados in the Sukkah context overlays perfectly to the Mishnah in Uktzin, where we have the machlokas between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yossi as to whether these Yados retain their Tumah status, even after you've started crushing them. As we see now, Ditnan, Rabbi Yossi Matame. After we quoted the Tanakhama in that Mishnah in Uktzin, we quoted Rabbi Yossi, who says that even after you started crushing, right now we're now within the Man Diomar that says that Basasan means that you actually physically crushed these stems. You've changed their physical attributes. So why would Rabbi Yossi hold that they are still Tame? We said that, right, you're now intending on using this as grape juice. These stems no longer have any utility to try to eat these grapes. So why would Rabbi Yossi say that they are tame? So the Gemara says, we're going to say that now. Hi, Mai. He says, I don't understand how you could say that the Braisa about Tzchach directly overlays and is exactly follows, it exactly tracks that Mishnah Nuksin. Bishlama Hasam over there in Uktzin Taima Rabbi Yossi Chazya Lukid Rabbi Shimon Lakish. Rabbi Yossi was following Reish Lakish, Dam Rabbi Shimon Lakish, Holovurios Lahofchin Baatar. Why did Rabbi Yossi say, in the context of those grapes that you now intend to use as grape juice, that even though you've now started crushing the yados, you've started crushing these stems, and they no longer have any utility to hold them to eat the grapes off of, that they still retain their tuma? He says that they still do have utility, because if you think about it, when you're crushing grapes on the threshing floor, how do you kind of turn things over and keep things moving? So you could step on them, but if you really want to get them moving, it's useful to have these stems on the grapes, because you take your hoe or your rake, and the rake gets extra
grip
on it. Thank you, extra grip, because there are stems on these grapes. So those stems do have some utility still, even though you're no longer using them to hold them to eat the grapes. But even as part of the grape juice making process, they have some utility. And so Rabbi Yossi says that they are tame. That's true there. But the Gemara says, if you're going to now overlay this machlokas and explain that the reason why the Acherim hold that these stems are still makabel tuma, even after you've started to crush them and to use them as schach, why should that be? For schach, the stems don't have any real utility. Right? Elohacha l'may chazya. What purpose do these stems have in the context of schach? So the Gemara answers, and anyone who's, I guess, built a sukkah and has worked with schach knows that these stems still do have utility when it comes to the schach. Chazil chisasar l'minket l'hu b'gilayu. Because when you take your sukkah down, it's going to be easier to remove the schach if the fact that these stems are there kind of makes it easier to remove the schach in a way. Because the fact that everything is all intact means you could kind of just take one instrument or just grab the whole bundle and remove the schach, and now all the grapes come off with the schach. You're not going to be left with grapes sitting on some of the beams maybe. It all comes off in one movement. And so therefore the stems attached to the grapes have some utility in that they allow you to remove the schach in one motion, similar to the utility that those stems had when you're crushing the grapes for grape juice, in that the sense that they give you better grip in order to make the grape juice.
Aren't the stems part of the schach itself?
Yes, they're attached. The whole machlokas between the Chachamim and the Tanakhama is, do you count these stems as tamei and appurtenant to the grapes, or as tahor and appurtenant to the rest of the schach?
Right? Regardless of whether you're using it as schach.
Right, you're using this whole thing as schach, but the problem is that the grapes themselves can't be schach because they're makabel tuma. They can be up there if you have rove of psolas overcoming the size of the grapes. And the question was, the stems of the grapes, do they count as part of the kasher schach or as part of the pusel grapes? So Acherim said they count as part of the pusel grapes, and now we're saying the reason is because they have utility still as kind of appurtenant to the grapes, because it's easier to remove the schach as one thing. That's in a nutshell what we're saying.
Sitting under the grapes is puzzle.
The grapes are puzzle, but because they're small enough that it's going to be okay. Meaning we're going to see soon if you have a 4 foot, a 4 tefach wide beam that's puzzle, perhaps, as we'll see in the next Mishnah, that's going to be a problem sitting under, but the grapes are just so small that they're butthole. You disregard them completely. If they're a bundle and all together, I guess then you're going to have a problem, because bittel assumes a real mixture. I'm guessing, it doesn't talk about that here, but I think that's probably right. If they're a bundle, then you shouldn't sit directly under them.
Like a cluster of grapes.
Like a cluster of grapes, right.
But
a
cluster's not going to be 4 tefachim wide.
Yeah, that's also true. A cluster's not going to be 4 tefachim wide. Yeah, maybe other fruits. I mean, that brisa didn't talk just about grapes. It talked about other things also. Dates, I don't know my fruits well enough. But anyway, presumably that's right. If it's big enough, you should move over. But it's not going to possibly your schach, it's not going to possibly your sukkah, etc. Okay, so all of that was a... So now, in the end, we're kind of basically saying that the Mishnah and Uktzin directly overlays, or this brisa directly overlays to the Mishnah and Uktzin. Chachamim are holding like the Tanakama and Uktzin, that that you disregard the stems, and Acherim is usually Remer, right? Throughout Shas, Acherim is Remer. So Remer is holding like Rabbi Yossi, that they're still Tameh because they have some utility, because you could help you take the schach off. Fine. The other Gemara says Gufa. Gufa in all of Shas means we're going to return to something we mentioned by the way, and now just analyze it a little deeper. And this is going to flow easily for us because we just did the whole analysis. Gufa. Kol yado sa'ochlin shebisisan begorin. This is the brisa we just quoted, the Mishnah we just quoted in Uktzin. When you have a stem that's attached to a fruit where you've crushed it, or maybe you've just unfurled it, as we said above, tahoros. Those are tahor, as we just said, according to the Tanakhama. Rabbi Yossi, as we said, it was metame. My bisisan, and now we have the machlokes that we alluded to before. What does this mean? Bisisan, Rabbi Yochanan, Amar bisisan mamish. He says that you crush them. Rabbi Elazar Omer Hitir Agdan. It just means you unfurled them. So Bishlam or Rabbi Elazar Damer Bissan Hitir Agdan Hainu Dimitame Rabbi Yossi. If all you did was unfurl them a little, then we could understand why Rabbi Yossi says they're still Tame. Why is he there still Tame? Because it's just the Machshava. So there's not much you've done, and that's why they retain their Tame status. Rabbi Yochanan, Damer Bissan Mamish, but according to Rabbi Yochanan, who said that you crushed the Mamish, so then Amai Matame Rabbi Yossi. We already know this. Why does Rabbi Yossi say they're Tameh? And what's the answer? Because they still have some utility in that when you, it helps you to get a grip on the grapes when you turn it over. Amar Shem Melakish, Ho of Ruyos Lovchan, Batar, you can use your hoe, an atar is a hoe, or a rake, it helps you get the grip and turn them over with the rake. And then we have some Agadita. Amrav Elazar, Lama Nimshla Tfilasan Shel Tzadikim Ke'atar. Rashi quotes the psukim that says, Vayatar Yitzchak LaHashem, when Yitzchak is davening for a child, so it says, Vayatar. Atar sounds like a davening. So the Gemara says, what is an atar in this context means a hoe or a rake. What's the connection between a rake and davening? Lomorocha Ma'atar Zemahapiches Atfua, just like a rake or a hoe flips over the produce, begorin, on the threshing floor, mimakom umakom, from one place to another, aft filoshen shal tzadikim, ma'apeches daito shal kadosh baruch hu, mimidas achzarius, mimidas rachmanis. So too, tefillah acts as like a hoe or a rake, in that it flips over Hashem's machshava, Hashem's ideas, just like a hoe or a rake, it flips it over, and our tefillahs hopefully are answered. There's a fascinating, really interesting Rashi here, that says, by the way, that whenever the Gemara says the word gufa, it's, as we said, it's kind of going back a few lines, and it's pulling out another a Mishnah or a Braisa that had been mentioned, and diving deeper into the analysis. And Rashi says that that's important often for Mishnayos that don't have Gemaras, like the Mishnah in Uktzin here doesn't have any kind of Gemara. And so you'd be left without any kind of explanation as to what this Mishnah is talking about. Here we quote a machlokes, Rabbi Yochanan and Rav Elazar, Amoraim, talking about, hey, understand that Mishnah. And so Gufa, Rashi says, the Gemara uses that trick or that tool of Gufa, of kind of delving into a Mishnah that was just mentioned in the context of a sugya, and kind of dives deeper into it, specifically for Mishnayos that don't have Gemaras attached to them, Rashi points out here. Okay, now we're completely changing our tune here, a brand new Mishnah, a brand new machlokes, a brand new halacha, that's a very famous halacha in the halachas of building a sukkah, and that is the halacha Gezeras Tikra. Gezeras Tikra. We know that a sukkah has all sorts of rules, such as, you know, dimension of the schach, how tall the walls are, how big the stock is, how, you know, how much psolas, how much silsa, merubah, mechamsa, etc. We've covered all these halachos. But in addition to all these technical halachos there's a halacha that you can't use your house. So even if your house, which is built for living all year round, adheres to all the halachas of sukkah. You have a funny roof that's actually made out of stuff that's kosher l'schach, but because it wasn't built specifically for sukkahs, it's a problem of tasev l'man asui. You need to build your sukkah specifically for sukkahs. And so your house that you live in all year round can't be used as a sukkah. That's a basic rule of sukkah 101. Even if you follow all the halachas, you have to build it special for sukkah. You can't use your house that's there for all year long. And so the Chazal were worried that if they allowed schach that looked like the kind of thing that you use for permanent structures, right? If your sukkah looks too much like a house, if the schach looks like a beam on your house, you might think that you could use your house as a sukkah as long as it complies with all the halachas of sukkah, but that's not really true, because you need to build your sukkah specifically for sukkahs. And so that manifests itself specifically in this halacha that we're about to say in our Mishnah, where if you have as part of your schach a neser, a beam that's too wide, that beam, we're afraid, looks like a permanent beam of a house, and therefore it's not okay. And we'll see now in a moment how wide that beam can be in order for it to still qualify as schach, where if it were larger than that or wider than that, it would now violate the Gezeiras Tikra. So the Gemara Mishnah says, Mesachachin bin Isarin, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, you can use beams as schach. He says that seems full stop. We're going to get into the Gemara to see what this machlokes is exactly. But Rabbi Yehuda at first glance says, you can use beams for schach. No problem. Rabbi Meir Oser. And Rabbi Meir says, you can't use beams as schach. Nasan alav neser shu rachav arba tfachim, kshera ubavad shel yishin tachtav. And we'll see where this fits into the machlokes Rabbi Yehuda or Rabbi Meir. But the Mishnah for now says, if you put a beam that's four tfachim wide, we'll call that a foot wide, maybe 15 inches wide. If you put a piece of wood across your sukkah, it's kasher. Ubavad shel yishin tachtav. You can't sleep under that beam.
Can you eat under it?
And you can't eat under that beam. You can't sit or eat under that beam. You can't use that sukkah under that beam. But it's not going to passel your whole sukkah. What's that?
Not going to passel the whole sukkah.
It's not going to passel the whole sukkah, but you can't sit under it. You can't eat under it. Okay.
May as well not have it there.
True. Maybe it's the only thing you had left, or it's holding up the sukkah. That's right. That's more common, right? Okay. So that's the Mishnah. Now we're going to analyze what's this machlokas exactly. And it's machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. Machlokas Amarayim. Amar Rav. Machlokas b'nisarim sheish ben arba. The machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir as to whether or not there's a gezeiras tikra altogether is talking about a situation where the beam is four tfachim wide. The Rabbi Meir islay gezeiras tikra. Rabbi Meir holds of gezeiras tikra and says that if it's four tfachim wide, it's pasul, you can't eat under it. Rabbi Yehuda less lay gezeiras tikra, and Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold of gezeiras tikra altogether. Meaning, it seems like Rabbi Yehuda is going to say, your beams could be a million miles wide, there's no such thing as gezeiras tikra. Aval ben esarim sheim ben arba, divrei akol kshera. If it's less than four tfachim, everyone holds its kasher. So according to Rav, the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir is fairly simple. If it's less than four tfachim, so then no problem. It's like every other beam in your sukkah, every other piece of bamboo or branch or whatever your sukkah, no problem. Everyone agrees it's okay. If it's four tfachim wide, so then Rabbi Meir has a problem with that. Rabbi Meir has this gezeiras tikra. He doesn't want you eating under that four tfachim wide beam. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda said, I never heard of such a thing. There's no problem. There's no maximum shear for a beam in your sukkah. Fine. That's Rav. Vishmuel Amar, Shmuel says it's a little more complicated. B'she'in bahim arba'a machlokas. The machlokas is where it's less than less than four tfachim. That's where Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda have a machlokas as to whether gzeres tikra applies. Aval yesh ben arba'a divrei akol psura. According to Shmuel, everyone agrees that if you have a beam that's more than four tfachim wide, that's no good. That's no good. You can't sit under that beam. It's not good for your sukkah.
Normally speaking, if we're talking about our today dimensions and measurements.
Right.
Normally we have the beams are sitting this way. We have a, let's say this is a 2x6.
Yeah.
It would be sitting this way.
Yes.
Okay. According to what they're saying is if it would be sitting this way, if it's flat, then you cannot sit under it because it's too wide. But if we have a 2x8 or a 2x10, again, it's not. But if you have it this that, way, vertical, then it's not a problem.
That's an excellent question. The question is, if what if you flip it this way? The Gemara is going to ask that exact question at the very end of Yudal and Amabez. But we're not up to that yet. Assuming now we're talking about just the width as it sits.
Mm-hmm.
The width as it sits. So according to Shmuel, B'shem ben arba machlokas, there's a machlokas of less than four. But if it's more than four, everyone agrees it's pasul. Everyone holds of Gezeiros Tikra. And then there's just a machlokas about whether if it's less than four. The Gemara then says, Ein ben arba, v'afil pachas mishlosha. Shmuel didn't seem to have a minimum, right? Shmuel, just reading Shmuel straight, it sounds like anything less than four is a machlokas now. But what do you mean? What if it's really thin? What if it's like a branch? Hakanim ba'almaninu. That seems to be perfectly fine. Meaning, you got to be. It sounds like from reading Shmuel that there would be a machlokas somehow that Rabbi Meir would say it's usser no matter how thin it is. When would Rabbi Meir ever have kosher schach? So the Gemara of Papa comes to clarify hachikamer. This is what Shmuel meant to say. Yesh ben arba divrei kol psula. Again, he's reiterating Shmuel. Shmuel says, if it's more than four tfachim, everyone agrees gzeiros tikra, it's pasul. Pachos mishlosha divrei kol ksheira. Less than three, everyone agrees it's kosher. That's my taima kanam bealmaninu. That's ideal schach. That's everyone agrees that's fine. Ki pligi and the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rimer is in the very narrow situation. Ki pligi mishlosha v'ad arba. If it's between three tefachim and four tefachim, so there, Rabbi Meir says it's aser. In other words, he says gzeiros tikra starts at three, and Rabbi Yehuda says it's mutter, meaning according to Rabbi Yehuda, gzeiros tikra starts at four. Mar savar kevan delesnu shir makom lo gazrinan. Umar savar kevan denafki umitaros lavud gazrinan. There's a machlokas about whether the standard should be lavud or it should be a different standard. In other words, Rabbi Meir says gzeiros tikra starts at three. Rabbi Yehuda says gzeiros tikra starts at four. But everyone agrees that there is such a thing as gzeiros tikra. Again, that's Shmuel. And Rav held, just to review, that Rabbi Yehuda literally doesn't hold the gzeiros tikra. It could be very wide and you don't have a problem. And Rabbi Meir says there is such a thing as gzeiros tikra. So now we say Tanan. We have a question from the Seifa of the Mishnah. If you remember, it said, Nasan aleha neser shu rachav arba tfachim ksheira ubavad shel yishan tachtav. We said that if you have a four tefach wide beam on your sukkah, you're not allowed to sleep under it or eat under it. Bishlom o Shmuel damar b'shein ban arba machlokes. So according to Shmuel, we understand this. Shmuel said that everyone holds a gezeiros tikra once you've hit four, so then we can understand that mishum hachi lo yishan tachtav, this violates gezeiros tikra. Elor Rav, d'amar b'sheish ben arba machlokes, but according to Rav, who said the whole concept of gezeiros tikra is itself tali in machlokes, and Rabbi Yehuda won't hold there's a problem any at all, so Rabbi Yehuda, why would Rabbi Yehuda say that you can't sleep under it? So the Gemara clarifies, Misavris divrei akolhi. Who said that the Seifa of Mishnah is according to Rav and Shmuel? That is according to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. Seifa son of Rabbi Meir. The Seifa is just going according to Rabbi Meir, according to Shitas Rav. Fine. Now we understand our Mishnah according to Rav. And according to Shmuel. We're going to spend the next little while through maybe three quarters down of Amud Beis trying to prove whether the halacha is like Rav or like Shmuel, trying to bring different rayas. So Tashma, we have a brisa. Tashma, Shnei Sadinin Mitzdarfin. Okay, so here's the story. Up till now, we've been talking about gzeiros tikra, what's okay for one beam, and if it violates gzeiros tikra, you can't sleep or eat under that beam. But your sukkah is still kosher, right? It's not going to pass your old sukkah. However, there is a point at which a gap of pasul schach, if it's big enough, is going to pasul your sukkah. And it's a machlokas on daf yud zayin, how big that has to be. It's a machlokas whether it's four tfachim or four amos. Very, very divergent machlokas. Big difference between four tfachim and four amos, right? But whatever the shear is, there's going to be a point where if you have a wide enough berth of pasul schach in the middle of your sukkah, that's going to essentially divide your sukkah into two, and you're going to have enough walls around the sides and enough dimensions on each side in order for it to be kosher, and otherwise it's just going to obliterate your sukkah and make it pasul. So that's what we're talking about here. At what point does pasul schach mitstarif join together to make it big enough to passel your whole sukkah, whether it's four tfachim, four amos? Tosos is going to point out that for much of this analysis, we're assuming that it is four tfachim that makes it passel. So says the Braisa, Shnei Sadinim Mitztarfin, if you have two like scarves or pieces of cloth, something that's clearly passel as schach, if you have two of them, they're mitzdarif together, because why wouldn't they? Shnei nesarin, if you have two beams of wood, ain mitzdarfin. So the Tanakhama here says that two beams don't join together to make it big enough to make your sukkah puzzle. Rabbi Meir Omer, af nesarin kisadin. And Rabbi Meir says, no, two beams will join together to make it big enough to puzzle your whole sukkah. So the Gemara now is going to say, bishlom Shmuel. According to Shmuel, da'amar b'she'ein b'ayin arba'a machlokes, aval yesh b'ayin arba'a divrei akol psua. According to Shmuel, who said that everyone holds of gezeiras tikra, and the only machlokes is where there's less than four tfachim. So we understand that the word nesarim means something that's less than four tfachim. And so therefore, the analysis here is, we're talking about in this brisa of something that's less than four tefachim, right? Nesarim. These are there are two nesarim that we'll call them three and a half. And the question is whether they join together. So mari mitzdarfin mitzdarfin la'arba. The question is whether these three and a half tefach beams join together to make more than four tefachim to pasul your whole sukkah. El rav d'amar b'sheish ben arba machlokes. According to Rav, who said, the whole machlokes is where there are four. Each beam is four. So it's not really appropriate to use the word neser, beam, unless it's at least four tfachim itself, right? And so the question, but if it's less than four, divrei kol kshera, then it's just like any kind of kosher schach. So eichi dami. What's the machlokas, what's the subject matter of the brisa at the very top line? Idis bu'ar ba'a, if it has four tfachim already, lamuhu it's darufe, then, right, the beam that we're talking about itself is four. If it's four, what's it being mitzdari for? It's already making the whole sukkah puzzle by virtue of it's being four tfachim. Id les bu'ar ba'a, and if it's less than four tfachim, why are you calling it a neser? It's not really a beam. It's just like kosher schach. Amai va'kanim ba'alman inu. Why should it ever be mitzdarif? It's just like a kosher sukkah that's filled with kosher schach, and it should be fine. The Gemara answers: Olam de'isbu arba. Really, it does have four umay mitzdarifin mitzdarifin la'arba amos min atzad. And the question of what is it mitzdarif for isn't as we originally thought to passel the whole sukkah because you have a berth of pasul schach in the middle, because that would have been just pasul with arba tfachim, right? As Tosafot pointed out, that's the assumption here. We're talking about a psul of arba tfachim. Rather, we're trying to figure out whether these beams are mitzdarif to make arba amos, which would be the shear for pasul schach on the side of the sukkah to be pasul. Because as we know, there's a concept of dofen akuma. You could have a very, very wide berth of pasul schach from the wall going out up to four amos, right? 6 feet. That's very big because of the concept of dofen akuma. It's as if it's like the wall is bent. And so therefore, since that's such a wide berth, the question of the braisa above is what are these nesarim being mitzdari for? They're being mitzdari to make it a dofen akuma, to say that if it's wider than four amos on the side, it's going to be pasul. You can't apply dofen akuma. Fine. Mishnah Rina. We have a kind of slightly different way of understanding this analysis. Bishlama Shmuel Damar Bishain Bain Arba Machlokes Avayish Bin Arba Divrei HaKol Psula, that everyone agrees to the concept of Gzeiras Tikra, and therefore a Neser is for Tfachim, Main Mitzdarfim Arba Amos Min Atzad. Then we can understand, as we just suggested at the very end of the last analysis, that the tziruf that we're looking for, and we're trying to analyze whether these arba amos go past it, is for the purpose of the don for akuma. El Rav, but according to Rav, Bishlamari Meir, again, Rav was the one who said that the machlokas is by arba, but in by an arba divrei kol kshera, meaning that there's a whole machlokas about whether there's a gzeiras tikra altogether. So Bishlamari Meir, who holds of gzeiras tikra, my mitzdarfin la arba amos min atzad. So then again, the question is whether these arba amos nisarim, when these arba tfachim nisarim are mitzdarif to make it a dofen akuma, or to blow apart your dofen akuma and make it too wide on the side. El Rab Yehuda, damar afilu yesh ben arba kashera. Rab Yehuda again never holds of dofen of gezeres tikru altogether. According to Rab Yehuda, even a very wide plank can be kosher schach. So then, my in mitzdarfin kanim ba'al meninu. The Gemara, this is a little intricate here. The Gemara is assuming now that if you hold like Rabbi Yehuda, that there's no maximum shear for a neser, and it could be really wide, and there's no such thing as gzeiras tikra, so then why would you ever analyze what's mitzdarif? Any piece of schach, no matter how wide it is, counts as bona fide schach. So it should never, ever be mitzdarif with anything else, in order to blow apart the possibility of dofen akuma, or to possible the whole schach, it's just like schach.
So according to the shita, you can put a piece of plywood as a schach?
That's what it seems like. According to Rabbi Yehuda, you would be. Right. We don't pass it like that. Okay. So the Gemara answer is, I did come Rabbi Meir mitzdarfin, I'm Rabbi Yehuda mitzdarfin. Rabbi Yehuda is answering, he's just going along for the ride. Really, Rabbi Yehuda said he wouldn't hold of this whole concept altogether because everything is kosher schach. But since we're already talking in these terms for Rabbi Meir, so we talk in these terms for Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, if you didn't follow that over the last 12 lines, it's very kind of whatever. It's a very dachistic distinction. It's a very sublime distinction that we're trying to approach. Now we're going to have a much more kind of hammer over your head approach to trying to bring a proof to Rav and Shmuel, because we have actual brises that make it sound explicitly like one position or the other. So the Gemara is going to suggest as follows. But basically, that analysis that we just had left us without any conclusion. You could explain it either way, according to Rav, according to Shmuel, it all worked out. The Gemara is still left with this machlokas Rav and Shmuel, and now we're going to try to bring a proof to Rav and to Shmuel. So here's where we're really going to get explicit proofs one way or the other. Tanya Kavasei de Rav, Tanya Kavasei de Shmuel. We have a brisa that sounds very much like Rav. We have a brisa that sounds very much like Shmuel. First, we'll try Rav's. Tanya Kavasei de Rav. The following sounds like Rav, and it's pretty explicit. Excuse me. Sachecha b'nesarim shel erez. Let's say you use cedar planks as your schach. She'ein b'hen arba, where they're less than four tfachim, divrei hakol kshera. If it's less than four tfachim, then it works according to everyone. Yesh ben arba, but if it's four tfachim or more, Rabbi Meir posel, Rabbi Yehuda machshir. Then you have the machlokas, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold at all gzeiras tikra, consistent with Shita's Rav, and Rabbi Meir holds of gzeiras tikra. Simple enough, this sounds exactly like Rav. The machlokas altogether as to whether there is such a thing as gzeiras tikra. And if there is such a thing as Gezeres Tikra, it starts at four. That's where Rabbi Meir says puzzle, and that's where Rabbi Yehuda says, I don't have a problem with it. So that sounds like a brisa consistent with Rav. Similarly, we have something consistent with Rav. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Maisa B'Shas HaSakana. There was a time of Shmad when the non-Jews were making a Gezerah on the Jews that they couldn't perform mitzvahs, they couldn't build sukkos. And so therefore, they wanted to build something that would function as a sukkah, but it wouldn't be apparent to the non-Jews that we're building sukkos. And so what did we do? She'venu nesarim shayu ben arba. We brought wide planks. It looked like a house. It looked like we were doing regular construction, and they were four tfachim wide. V'sichachnu al garbei marpeses. and we just placed them on a structure that was already there. V'yashavnu tachteim, and we ate and we sat and we ate and we slept under them on Sukkos. And so this sounds like, perhaps, like it's like Rav, because it's saying that they were yotzei the mitzvah of Sukkah with a 4 tefach wide plank. Presumably they were just holding like Rabbi Yehuda, that there's no such thing as gezeiros tikra, and that's why this sukkah was perfectly functional, even though it has 4 tefach wide planks as schach. And the Gemara says, Amru lo, they responded, Misham raya, that's your proof? Ein shasa sakana raya. That's not our proof that the halacha is like Rav. That was a dangerous time where you had to do what you could do. If you could only build a sukkah that's not even kosher, so then what are you going to do? Might as well build a sukkah that's not kosher. Something like, I guess, Zecher L'mitzvah or something like that. But it's not a raya because that's a shasa sakana. Fine, that was all attempts at proofs at Rav. Now we have a Tanya Kavasi de Shmuel. Sachacha bin Asarim shel Erez. You make a sukkah with cedar planks. Sheish ben Arba. Then, and they're 4 tefach wide. Divrei HaKol Psula. Everyone agrees they're pasul, whether it's Rav Yehuda, Rav Meir, everyone agrees Gzeres Tikra. Once it's past 4, it's pasul. Ein ben Arba. If it's less than Arba, we said between 3 and 4. Rav Meir Posel, Rav Yehuda Machshir. Umoder Rav Meir, Shim Yesh Bein Neser Uneser, Kim Lo Neser, And this is kind of a side point that's not directly relevant to our analysis here. This is talking about a situation where, so first of all, the beginning of that brice that we just quoted clearly is holding like Shmuel, right? That the whole thing is, that the Gzeres Tikra is across the board. Everyone agrees to Gzeres Tikra, and that's only true by more than 4. If it's less than 4, it's Machlokes Rav, Remeir and Rehuda. Now we're throwing in an extra halacha that according to Remeir, if you stagger it, puzzle, meaning a tikra problem, you know, meaning more than 3, and then kosher schach, and then a neser, a tikra, and then kosher schach. If you keep on doing that from each side, and then in the middle you meet, and there's enough pesel benem, there's enough kosher schach in the middle, then it's going to be a kosher sukkah. Whereas if when you meet at the end, in the middle, I should say, it's 2 planks next to each other, they're going to be mitzarif and make a problem. Fine, that's what this Bryce is saying at the end. Good. Now we say, Umoder of Yudashim Nasano and Nesser Shu Rachavar Bat Fachim Kshera, Vinshem Tachtav, Ayashan Tachtav, Yatsa de Chavaso. This is all just a review of what we said. Now we come to the Bryce of Itmar. Hafcha, not Bryce. Now we're going to quote a new Machogus. Hafchan Al Tzideim. This is your question. This is Aaron's question. If you now turn, let's say you have a Nesser that would be Puzzle otherwise. It's 4 Tfachim or more, and it's going to be Puzzle. It's Gzeres Tikra. But you don't have it lying on its width, rather you flip it so that it's at its length, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a kind of a tall plank standing up. From the perspective of someone in the sukkah, you look up and it's just an inch wide, but it's very tall. It's like a beam that's standing. It's like in modern day construction, that's how we do it, to give it more structure, right? We give it some more support. So that's the question. Hafchan Al Tzideim, does the Gzeres Tikra apply across the board no matter how it's situated? Or is it only if it's covering a width of 4 tfachim? So Rav Huna Amar Psua. Rav Huna says it's Pasul. Rav Chista Rabba Bar Rav Huna Amrik Sheira. And now we have a story. Ikor Rav Nachman was Sura. Rav Nachman went to Sura. Olga Be Rav Chista Rabba Bar Rav Huna. And Rav Chista and Rabba Bar Rav Huna visited Rav Nachman in the place where he was staying in Sura. So Amri lay, and they said to him, Hafchan al tzideihem mahu. They asked him this question. We know there's such a thing as Gzeres Tikra. It can't be more than 4 tfachim wide. But what if you flip it on its edge? Is that still a problem? So Amr lahu, psula. Nasu kashipudim shamatacha. So he said, something that's 4 tfachim wide is categorically like metal. It's pasul schach, and even if you flip it at its side, it's going to be puzzle. It's no good. So Amr Lahu Rav Huna. So Rav Huna said, Lo Amri Lahu Amri Kavasi. So Rav Huna said, didn't I tell you that Rav Nachman would say like me? Yeah, right. Rav Huna was the one who said puzzle. So Rav Nachman said puzzle. So Rav Huna said, I told you that it's puzzle. And Rav Nachman, who was a big rabbi, he agreed with me. So he said, didn't I tell you you say like me? So Amru Lei, so they said to him, Umi Amru Lecha Mar Taima Vol Kabibu Minei. So they kind of are implicitly criticizing Rav Huna. Rav Huna, when he said his halacha, he simply said that it's puzzle. If you flip this thing on its edge, it's puzzle. Whereas when they asked Rav Nachman said it's puzzle because it's categorically puzzle schach as if it was a piece of metal. He's kind of giving a reason. So Rav Huna was all jubilant that Rav Nachman agreed with him, and he said to Rav Chista and Rabbi Rav Huna, I told you that the halacha is that it's puzzle. So they respond to him, well, maybe we would have conceded to your point if you had been as explicit with Rav Nachman and given a reason for your halacha. All you said was puzzle. Rav Nachman went a step further and he explained that the reason it's puzzle is because it's categorically puzzle schach as if it were metal. Maybe if you had kind of given a reason as well, then we would have bought into that and agree with you. Amr Lehu, so he responded to them, Uma ba'isu, umi ba'isu minai taima, v'lo amri lehu, did you ask me the reason? You just asked me the halacha. I said the halacha. I don't have to give a reason. I answered the halacha. So that's the end of their exchange. Okay. Leima Masielei, in mechazek es kedei rosho v'rubo v'shulchano, osho nifritza pirtza kedei shidizdakir ba kedi babas rosh, osho nosan las neser shu rachav arba tfachim, afa pisho ichnis lutocha osho shetfachim psua. So we have a braisa that's talking about all sorts of categories of a puzzle sukkah. One is where it's too small to fit your table in it, or if at the bottom of the wall there's too big of a gap between the ground and where the wall starts so that a goat can go through. And then the last one we said is, again, in this brace, it says, Oshan nasan elan neser, you put a plank, shurachav arba tfachim, that's more than four tfachim wide, afal pi shohichnis l'tocha el shlosha tfachim, even though you've only put in the sukkah three tfachim. So that's a very hard to understand description. What's the situation? You have a plank that's four tfachim wide, but you've only put three tfachim in the sukkah. Maybe, well, you're already skipping to the answer. But we're suggesting maybe that means that you took this four tefachim plank that's four tefachim wide, and the only part that's kind of apparent from someone sitting in the sukkah was three tefachim, meaning you flipped it on its side, which happened to be three tefachim, and so maybe that's a proof that that's also puzzle, like Rav Huna. So the Gemara says, no. That's what we say. Lav hechi dami, what's the situation? Lav gilin sheyav chadashi dayan. It must be a situation where you flipped it on its side. And the grand says, no. Lo hacha b'mayaskin kigon da'ancha apuma d'tamalasa, d'metalasa, d'ayol t'lasa l'gayo v'apik chad l'bar. It's talking about the situation where you said, where you had a four tefach wide neser, and only three tefachim are in the sukkah proper, and a fourth tefach is kind of hanging over the lip outside of the sukkah, past the walls. That's the situation where we say, it's problematic. Dahavale pesel hayotze min asukkah. This is a situation where you have the schach outside of the sukkah, and the rule is v'chol pesel hayotze min asukkah nidon kesukkah. A little counterintuitive. Even though this is now outside of the sukkah, we view this as being in the sukkah, and this violates gezeiras tikra. Even though only three of the four tefachim are actually in the sukkah proper, the fourth is hanging over the lip outside past the walls, still we say this violates gezeiras tikra. It still looks like you're building a sukkah out of a beam of a house, and we're worried that you can conclude that a house used for all year round use is kosher as a sukkah, and therefore it's going to be puzzle. That's the bottom line.
According to this shit, if my schach is kosher, but it's sticking over the edge, could somebody be sitting behind the wall and be considered sitting at a sukkah?
The Gemara is going to talk about that on Daf Yud Tes, I believe. Mm-hmm. On Daf Yud Tes is going to talk about that. whether you can somehow rely on some kind of cool where you don't have four, you don't have three walls even.
No, that's it. You have
it's
four
the
walls,
other edge of a sukkah.
You have four walls, but your schach is just sticking out, three.
Right.
So you can have a little table there and somebody will be sitting there. He's under the schach, but his back is to the wall of the sukkah.
Yeah.
You know, so you have people sitting inside, but you have like somebody who's sitting outside in the wind, but he has a schach over his head. So
he doesn't have walls.
He doesn't have walls. But can he rely on the walls on the inside? The Gemara Yotes is going to talk about this. I don't think it's going to go so far as to say you could that's kosher, but maybe I think you don't need as many walls. Maybe if one of the walls comes out, that's okay. I don't remember. It's on Yotes.
In Pesach, they have these enclosed porches. I see it. They call the flower room. You rip off the roof. You take the roof off. You just rip it off.
Yeah.
You use it made pitzchach. Could you use that as a sukkah?
So that's going to rely on all these dofen akuma situations. How far is the gap from the wall? You know, you can rely on dofen akuma there. If you don't have walls coming down right at the skylight, let's say, that you've ripped off, you can rely on dofen akuma. That might be okay. And the answer is, yeah, they have such a thing as retractable roofs that you then put schach on it, assuming that your other dimensions work. What was I just about to say? There was some other thing on your test that's also similar. That's this Pesach Hayosim Min HaSukkah Nidun Kesukah. Oh, that's this the thing we just quoted. It was on your test. Yeah, it's on your test somewhere else. Pesach Hayosim Min HaSukkah Nidun Kesukah. And then the Gemara is going to say, what is this talking about? Pesach Hayosim Min HaSukkah Karma Yosim Achurei Sukkah Baba Inun Shalosh Tefanos. Whatever. It's going to get into all discussion of how many. Maybe the rules are relaxed where it's an extension of an existing sukkah, and the schach goes a little farther. Okay.
Okay. Go ahead.